All right, folks, welcome to the Game Trail Podcast. I'm your host, Trail Kreitzer. This week, I'm going to be doing a solo episode. Last week, we had Brady Miller, which is a coworker here. Many of you are familiar with Brady. I had a fun episode talking to Brady. I actually had a lot of feedback from folks that are interested in getting to know Brady on a different level, and they kind of enjoyed some of the random questions. So I appreciate Brady doing that. If you haven't listened to the episode, go back and give it a listen. Especially if you're a fan of Brady or anything that we do here over at Go Hunt, that was kind of a unique perspective into what that guy is all about. And I appreciate him being game. This week, I'm going to be doing a solo episode. I try to use these solo episodes, as I said, just to kind of relay some information, things that I've been working on, thinking about. And this time of year, I'm mostly thinking about getting my bow set up, getting it ready for the hunts, and really trying to get that thing dialed in before those summer months when my kids are out of school and I don't have those daily duties in the morning of trying to get them up and ready and off to school. And I can really put more time and effort into getting up to the archery range and shooting some various distances every morning and really putting a lot of time and effort into it. Also, you know, we're going to attend some TAC events this year. We may hit Big Sky. We may hit the one in Utah, Northern Utah. So, you know, as part of that, we try to get a bow dialed in, and really we're working on the end goal of trying to get a setup that's the most accurate that we can get it for, you know, going into hunting season in the fall. I'm optimistic this year. I know I've got a deer tag in Southern Utah. I'm going to end up picking up an elk tag in Colorado, whether that's a draw tag, which I hope to draw, or just an OTC tag, and where this might be the last year for non-residents in Colorado to pick up an OTC tag for archery. You know, it wouldn't break my heart if I didn't draw in Colorado and I just got to put my time and effort into OTC, because I do still think that those are pretty good hunts. So before I jump into kind of the meat and potatoes of the podcast, I want to thank my sponsor. So Matthews Archery is a sponsor of the Game Trail Podcast. I appreciate those guys stepping up and being a sponsor and helping me do this podcast. They make a great bow. I was down in Vegas yesterday. I always try to take my bow when I'm down there. And after the workday, it's kind of fun to go out into the warehouse with a couple of the guys and just fling some arrows. But I have total confidence in that bow. I really like that Matthews lift. If you guys haven't had a chance to shoot it, I would suggest you get to your local pro shop, get some arrows through it, and see what you think. I think it's a really nice, well-thought-out design platform. And I think it puts me in a great spot, you know, going into the fall to feel confident in my bow and my setup and feel like I'm going to make a shot and kill a great animal. So I wanted to thank those guys. Matthews is being a sponsor. Also, I wanted to hit you guys with a promo code. You can use the promo code GAMETRAIL. That's just GAMETRAIL. That's my promo code for this podcast. You can use that to sign up for a Go Hunt Insider account. If you do so, you're going to get 50 points back in the Go Hunt gear shop. 50 points is 50 bucks. Pretty straightforward. 1 point's $1. And you can use that towards the purchase of any gear that you want in the Go Hunt gear shop, including archery equipment. It seems like I'm always buying arrows, arrow components, vanes, inserts. I don't know why it feels like I go through so many arrows, but I do a lot of shooting in my basement, and seems like I blow the back end out of other arrows. And I guess I'm not smart enough to know that I shouldn't rotate and not shoot the exact same spot every single time, but it does feel like I go through arrows, and that's what I would put my money towards if I had 50 bucks into the Go Hunt gear shop at this point. So yeah, sign up for an insider account, use that promo code GAMETRAIL. Also, I should mention real quick, if you decide to purchase gear in the gear shop, you can use that same promo code and you can get 10% off of almost every brand in the gear shop. There are a few brands that don't allow us to do a promo or a discount, but you know, on most every other product, use that promo code GAMETRAIL, get yourself 10% off on any gear you want in the shop. So with that, this episode, like I said, it's going to be solo. I wanted to focus on something that I've been thinking about and working on lately. I remember having a conversation with a pro archer one time, and it was just a local shoot. It's been a number of years ago. But in talking to him, he basically, he said, you know, you can do everything right behind the bow. You can be the best shot in the world, but if your marks are off, you're just not going to achieve. You're not going to do well. You're not going to do well in competition. You're not going to do well in the field in a hunting situation. So really, sights, dialing in your pins, the way that you set up your sight for a hunting situation, those are all super critical. And, you know, citing in a site or picking a site for that matter, you know, it's a significant decision that you need to make. And when you're sighting in your pins, I think a lot of people think you just run up to the range, you shoot your pins in. In some cases that might, you know, that might work out for folks. But for me, it's typically like, you know, several day process of really trying to dial in my pins and get those set and making sure that I'm completely confident in the way that those pins are set up and that they're also hitting, you know, dead nuts at each individual yardage. So this week I'm going to be talking sights, archery sights. Here on my desk, I've got four different sights. I've got a UV slider sight with a two-pin vertical housing cartridge on it. When you buy that sight, it does come with a three-pin, and then it's got a little bonus pin at the bottom. I've kind of switched out the cartridges for a two-pin housing, so I've got two 19 pins, I guess, and those are on a vertical pin post. I'm going to talk a little bit about pin selection and the number of pins and kind of my thoughts and ideas, but I've got one of those sitting here on my desk. I've also got an HHA four-pin Tetramax tournament edition that's on the dovetail bar, and it does have the four-pin housing on it. I've also got a dialed archery sight here on my desk that's got three pins. Those are all on a vertical pin post, so it's a vertical pin and you know, three individual indicators or fibers, if you will. And then the last sight that I've got kind of sitting here, I've been tinkering with and playing with, is the Excel Landslide sight. And that Landslide, it's got the carbon bar, the dovetail bar that goes with the bridge lock technology on the Matthews bows, but it does have a five pin housing. Those are 19 pins. And probably within the last month and a half, I would say I have had each individual sight in my Matthews lift bow, and I've been playing with each individual one and kind of tinkering with it and see what it is that I do and don't like about each individual sight and what I do and don't like about, you know, different pin configurations. And so I wanted to give you guys kind of a glimpse into my thoughts on those individual sights and also just on picking a sight in general. I've already kind of mentioned number of pins. So you can see just from me talking, I've got several different configurations. I've got the dialed, which has got three pins on a vertical post. I've got the UV slider with two pins on a vertical post. I've got four pins that come in horizontal on the HHA, and I've got a five pin model with that Landslide that come in horizontally. So I've got a bunch of different pin configurations. And one of the first questions I get a lot, and I have been getting a ton of questions lately about archery sights, is how many pins? How many pins should I get for Western big game hunting? And I think there are different scenarios for different animals. I'm going to touch on that as I kind of work through this process. But that's a question that I get asked pretty often, is how many pins should you have for, you know, Western big game hunting? I've been pretty vocal when it comes to hunting sites and what I like in a pin configuration. And I like multi-pin hunting sites. Specifically, I like a five-pin site. And I know that I'm beating a dead horse here probably because a lot of you, if you've listened to anything that I've done or if you watch any of the YouTube videos that I've done, I've talked about my reasoning behind liking multi-pin sites. And specifically, I like having a five-pin site. And the reason that I like a five-pin site is because in a hunting situation, it can change so quickly. And I speak specifically to elk a lot in this regard, but an elk, you could be calling an elk can come in, and you've kind of got your windows picked out on where you think he's going to come in. Sometimes that's the case, sometimes it isn't. But they may come in and work through your effective range at a variety of distances before they may actually offer you a shot. You know, they may go from 60 yards with a cow to 40 yards behind a tree. They may kind of work back in to, you know, 35 yards before you can actually stop them in a window to shoot. And when you're in that moment, I'm super focused on the animal. Like, I'm focused on remembering the pre-ranges of the trees that I've ranged and kind of estimating the distance. I'm working out all these situations in my mind as I am in that process. And my mind is racing. If you've ever been in that situation, your mind is racing, like your adrenaline's spiking and you got a lot going on in your head. And for me, I think it's advantageous to have multiple pins in that scenario, and also having practiced with those pins prior to that season. So you're familiar with, you know, what pin to use at what yardage, you know, you don't really have to think so much about it. And that's one of the reasons I like a multi-pin site in that situation, is that I don't have to think like, did I move my sight? I don't have to make or add any extra movement to move my sight. You know, anytime you move, when you've got an animal within range, you're potentially risking the chance of spooking that animal. And you're also increasing the probability that you're going to make some noise and you're going to spook them. So in those situations, specifically for elk, I really like multi-pin housings. I think it gives you a leg up, less movement, less noise, and really less to think about. And that's why I like a multi-pin site, specifically for elk hunting. Now, you could make the argument for spot and stock mule deer hunting, for example, that a single pin slider might be a better option, because in a lot of those situations, you might have a mule deer buck that's bedded. You're going to make your stock. You're going to sneak in. In a lot of cases, hopefully, you're going to be above that buck, and you're going to be waiting for him to stand. And you'll have had a chance to range that buck. You'll be able to dial your sight to the exact yardage. And ideally, when that animal stands, you execute a shot with the exact yardage on that animal. And that happens. I mean, I think it happens a whole heck of a lot more on mule deer than it does on elk. But I've also had situations where a mule deer has got up from a bed, doesn't offer you a shot, maybe he turns dead away from you, or, you know, another buck is standing in front of him and those bucks kind of feed out, or maybe you even, spook a buck and trying to draw your bow, and that buck, you know, he takes those stots is what they call them. Those bucks kind of jump out, and maybe he covers the distance of 5 or 10 yards. And at that point, he's still in your effective range and you want to be able to execute a shot. But at that point, if you're shooting a single pin, you're kind of worried about where your pin might hit. And I don't really like the guessing game. I want to have pin references to execute a quick shot. So that's the reason I like multiple pin housings. Now, people do make the argument that a single pin housing, probably the one thing that I hear the most, the reason that people like a single pin housing is that they like a clearer sight picture, and they like the amount of light that is gathered, you know, that you can see in a single pin housing. And if you're shooting a multi-pin sight, specifically those ones like the HHA here that I've got, or the Excel Landslide, where those pins come in horizontally from the side, you're effectively blocking out a large portion of your field of view in your scope. And I would say that in most of the people that I talk to that like a single pin housing, that's one of the things that they say. First and foremost, they like the field of view. Secondly, they like to be able to dial to the exact yardage. And I can understand that. I get it. You know, I think there's a lot of validity to it. If, you know, a single pin housing was not an effective way to shoot, you wouldn't see every pro, you know, on an archery line in an ASA shoot or a Vegas shoot shooting either a single pin scope housing or a scope with a dot in the middle or a fiber in the middle. You know, certainly there's a lot of validity in that, and I get it. I'm going to actually pitch another argument for multi-pins. And again, this is highly personal. This is me. This is having gone back and forth between a single pin and multi-pin housings. But I'm going to offer kind of another field of view and something for you guys to think about. And, you know, ideally, these are all, you know, personal, subjective decisions that you have to make. But I'm going to make the argument that a multi-pin housing, which is a little bit cluttered, kind of eliminates your field of view, if you will, either to the left or the right, depending on how that animal is standing. I actually think it's kind of a good thing. And for me personally, having tried both, I actually like a little bit clutter in my field of view. And you got to hear me out. The reason I think I like that is because I feel like I am actually a little bit more relaxed. When I'm aiming at an animal, I feel like I can put the row of pins in a multi-pin housing kind of on that crease of the shoulder, that golden triangle, if you kind of heard people talk about that. And kind of everything else back to the direction of the pins is kind of blocked out. And I know people like that field of view because they can kind of, you know, use it to dictate what else is going on in that sight picture. But I'm actually of the opinion that if it's kind of out of sight, it's kind of out of mind. And I feel like I'm really only focused on that golden triangle, that pocket of the vitals that I want to hit. And in those cases, I actually feel more relaxed with a little bit more clutter in my field of view. And I know that might not be a popular opinion, but that's how I feel. And I've done enough shooting with both housings to know that I'm a little bit more relaxed, specifically in a hunting situation. I'm a little bit more relaxed with a little bit more clutter and a potentially a smaller field of view, if you will. I find it a lot easier to focus. So that's one other reason that I like a multi-pin housing. You know, I think it's fun to shoot dots or shoot targets with a single pin housing where you got a single pin that kind of sits in the middle and you've got a lot of field of view. But in a hunting situation, I think I've pretty well decided that a multi-pin housing is a better option for me. And that would be my advice. Like I said, if you're a diehard elk hunter, I think it makes a lot of sense to use multiple pins. I touched on that. I kind of got that off my chest. And like I said, I'm probably beating a dead horse, but that's my case. And, you know, if you're out there, you're kind of thinking, you're trying to decide, what makes the most sense for you. You know, give it some thought, see what makes the most sense. I did want to talk about a third pin configuration, and this is kind of like a best of both worlds, if you will. And these have kind of come out more recently. It's interesting. The first sight that I ever bought that I can remember was probably 25 years or so ago. And it was a Trophy Ridge 5-pin sight, but they were all arranged vertically. So you had the field of view of the whole scope, but you also had 5 pins that were stacked vertically. And in recent years, we've kind of seen more of an influx of those types of sights. Like I said, this dialed archery sight that I've got here, it's got 3 pins or fibers. Kind of a bummer in my opinion. You can't move those individual pins. Those are going to be set other than your top pin, which you can move with the slider portion of the sight. And I've also got, you know, like I said, the UV slider here, which has got 2 pins, the second pin in that also stationary. You can't move that individual fiber to dial it in for whatever range that you might want to. You can still use that top pin to dial for your various ranges, but it does give you a second or third, even in the example of the dialed sight that I've got sitting here, reference point for aiming. And kind of the train of thought there is that you would be able to use your single pin, your top pin, as your primary aiming point, and you can use the dial to dial to the exact yardage. But in a hunting situation, you can use those second and maybe potentially your third pin as a reference. So for example, I've got this UV slider here. It's a 2-pin version. I know that the top pin is my dial, my floater, if you will. And the second pin in that is pretty much 42 yards. So I know initially I can either dial to it, or in a hunting situation, animal walks out, he's 40 yards. I know that second pin that kind of sits in the middle of the post is 42 yards. And if I had to, and animal's at 30 yards or 33 yards, I could potentially pin gap between those two and execute a shot without having to move that sight. I think it's a good option, and I think a lot of people are, you know, kind of using that as the best of both worlds. Like I said, I'm going to give you my opinion on what I think of these, you know, single post multi-pin option sights. And I don't really love them, to be honest. And again, this is personal, but I'll tell you why. They're really nice for using that top pin as a dialer or a floater. And if you had the time and you could dial exactly to the yardage and execute a shot with that top pin, I think it's a great option. But using those second or the third pins is kind of tough, in my opinion. The reason is because your field of view of precise aiming at a dot or a spot is kind of blocked out by that post. So the post, you know, extends above and below. And I find it hard personally to focus and aim at an exact or a precise spot with those subsequent pins that are kind of set within that post. And I've wanted to love them. I've kind of played with them. Like I said, for the last month and a half or so, I've been going back and forth with those and trying them, and it's totally doable. It just doesn't feel as accurate or as precise to me as a pin that comes in horizontally. And it feels like I have a better field of view, a better aiming point, if you will, because I'm not really blocking out the vertical portion with that pin post. So that's kind of my take on it. Again, sights are so subjective. There's a lot of subjectivity in picking a sight that's going to work for you. I also think this, I should note this. I actually, if you grew up shooting multiple pin sights, you're probably used to pin gapping. So if you haven't heard that term, pin gapping, essentially what that is, you know, if you've got your multi-pin set sight at 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, and a deer walks out and he's 43 yards, you would just pin gap. So you would hold between your 40 and your 50, and you would just kind of estimate between those two, execute a shot. And you know, what's interesting is I actually shoot those in-between yardages better with a multi-pin sight that comes in horizontally where I'm pin gapping than I do with one of these multi-pin sights that are mounted on a vertical pin post, and I'm using that second or third dot or, you know, fiber for aiming and reference. For example, I'll give you an example. So my UV slider sight, that second pin that sits in the vertical post, is 42 yards. I know that. If I'm shooting a 5-pin Excel landslide in a 5-pin configuration that comes in horizontally, I actually shoot better and more accurate pin gapping than I am using that second pin in the UV slider when I know that that pin is exactly at 42 yards. And I think it's probably a lot of it personal and just being used to using pin gaps. But I shoot them better, and that's just the way that it is. I'd be interested in hearing your guys' thoughts. And like I said, there's a lot of subjectivity in picking a site, but hopefully I've given you some food for thought so that you can help yourself make the best selection for you. So that's probably one of the biggest decisions when you're buying a multi-pin site. You know, what's the hunting situation? You know, is a single pin better for you? Do you feel more comfortable with the bigger field of view? Do you feel like you aim better? Do you feel like you're more precise? Or in a hunting situation, like I explained, when you're hunting elk, is it better to have multi-pins? So hopefully I've given you some food for thought, and you guys can make the best selection for yourself. The next thing I want to talk about is pin size. So pin size isn't really probably talked about nearly as much. And I'm not going to go super deep into it, but it is a question that I get asked, is like, what do you prefer as far as pin size? So the most common hunting sight sold in our gear shop, and probably any gear shop, whether that's Lancaster or any other you know, shop that sells sights, is going to be a 0.019 pin. So that number is, it kind of reflects the size of the fiber in the pin. So the other common sizes are going to be a 0.0 or 0.10 or a 0.029. The one being smaller than the other, the 0.10 being the smallest of those. And I talk to a lot of people. I see a lot of people that they prefer to have like a custom sight built where the bottom pin is going to be a 0.01 size. And that's kind of what they use for their floater or their bottom pin, if you will. And they use that to shoot further distances. And the reason they do that is that the smaller fiber blocks out less of the spot you are aiming at, specifically at distance. So for example, a 0.29 or a 0.19 pin at 90 yards is going to cover up most or pretty much all of an 8-inch dot. It's just so far out there, and the pin so large is larger because it's closer to you, and it's going to kind of block out, and it does eliminate your ability to kind of precisely aim. And that's kind of what I hear people say, is that they like that 0.10 as their floater or their bottom pin, because it gives you a little bit more room to see specifically at distances. And I think it's a good option for folks, and I hear people talk about it quite a bit. I'm going to give you my take on pin size. I like a 0.019, and I like that pin whether I'm shooting a single pin slider or I'm shooting multiple pins. And again, this is me, but my eyes just do not offer me what they once did. So I'm into my 40s at this point, and I cannot see a small pin very well anymore. It just does not gather as much light. So that's one argument for a larger pin. They're definitely going to be brighter. They're going to gather more light, and you're going to have a little bit better, you know, view because that pin's brighter. I've even got the UV slider sight. Those pins in that three pin housing are 0.15, I believe. And then the bottom pin is a 0.10, which is kind of that fixed pin. I struggle to see those. They're just not bright enough for my old eyes, and I have a really hard time. So that's one reason I like larger pins. And if you think about a hunting situation, most of the time you're going to be taking shots at low light. So you're talking, you know, right at dawn or dusk. And in those instances, when you're most likely to get a shot on an animal, I think it's really important that you gather more light and you have a brighter pin for a better aiming point. So that's why I like 19s and even, you know, 0.29s. That's a big pin, but you know, I think there's a case to be made for it, depending on, you know, your vision and what you're comfortable with. Another reason that I like larger pins, like that 0.019, is that I think it makes me more relaxed. And I've been, obviously, I've already talked here about a couple situations and picking a site as it relates to my anxiety level or how I feel. I've been, I've been accused of being a, you know, an anxious person or nervous person. I think I saw a comment somewhere on a YouTube video or maybe on a social media post. And maybe that is the case. Maybe I do get anxious in those situations specifically, but I'm trying to deal with it. I'm trying to pick equipment that makes me the most relaxed and it helps me shoot better, because I do think you make a better shot the more relaxed you are and the more you're able to manage a situation. So I actually like a larger pin because I do feel like I'm more relaxed in that. And the reason is because if you think about a small pin, a really small, fine aiming point, if you're aiming, whether you're at close yardages, specifically at close yardages, you're going to see that pin movement a whole lot more exaggerated because it's going to float around in your aiming point. So you're going to perceive, you're going to see more movement than you will with a larger pin. A larger pin is going to cover up a lot more of that dot than a smaller pin would, and your perceived movement is going to be less. And that also comes down to aiming at distance. So if I'm going to shoot out to 80, 90, 100 yards at the archery range, my 0.019 pin is definitely going to cover up a large area, a much larger area than a smaller pin would. So it's probably not as precise for aiming, but what it does allow me to do is to I perceive less movement. And because I perceive less movement, I feel more relaxed. I feel less anxious. And really all I'm focusing on is putting that pin in the middle. And if, you know, that covers up an 8-inch circle at 100 yards, I actually feel pretty decent that that pin's covering up that section. And I can just go through my shot process and execute a shot. And I do feel like I'm more relaxed. I shoot better with a larger pin. And again, that's personal. I know a lot of people that like smaller pins and they like it, like I said, because if it's a more precise aiming point, but I'll just tell you, there is more perceived movement in that pin. It all comes down to your own ability to manage that and execute a shot. And for me, I found that I aim better, I'm more relaxed, and I shoot better with a slightly larger pin. So something to think about. Also the brightness and kind of the condition of your eyes is all to be taken in consideration when you're buying a new sight. So that kind of covers number of pins, also covers size of pins, which is a big consideration when you're buying a sight. The next thing I wanted to talk about is slider sights. So what is a slider sight, right? I get asked this quite a bit. Hey, if I'm coming out west, do I need a slider sight? And these have become really, really popular, especially out west, I would say, in the last maybe 5-6 years at least. And slider sights are probably 99%, I would bet, of what we sell in the Go Hunt Gear Shop. You know, we carry fixed pin models that are fixed five pin or three pin that, you know, don't move, that are not a slider sight. We do sell those, but we don't sell that many of them. There just aren't that many people buying sights anymore that are non-slider sights. And I think most people going into 2024, if you've got an elk tag, a mule deer tag, an antelope tag, you probably have a slider sight on your bow, or you may be considering buying a slider sight. So essentially, if you don't know what a slider sight is, a slider sight allows you to dial the housing with the pin or the pins down to offer you the ability to shoot further ranges. So you just dial that whole housing down with the dial, which allows you to extend your yardage. I'm not entirely sure. It'd be interesting to know how many shots are taken in the field each fall by folks that are actually using the slider feature on their sight. Certainly if you're shooting a single pin or a double pin, you're probably using that slider a lot, because you know, you can have that thing sighted in from 20 all the way out to 100. So even your close yardages, you're probably dialing for. But for guys that are using a five pin or a three pin slider sight, it'd be real interesting to know how many people are actually using that in the field in a hunting situation. I would be willing to bet probably in the last 5-6 years, the number of shots that are being taken at 70 plus yards on, you know, elk or deer is probably a heck of a lot more common than it was. And whether you think that should be the case is probably another discussion. I'm not going to get too deep into it, but I will say that, you know, if you have the ability and the shot situation and the distances within your personal ethical range, then I'm in favor of it. You know, I've taken some shots, 68 yard shots, and made them. I have used it. I know a lot of people, myself included, I like to practice at really long yardages, you know, out to maybe even 120 yards, which is, you know, mostly just for fun. You know, with the popularity of these 3D archery shoots, like Attack Event that, you know, is coming up in the summer that I already mentioned, we're probably going to be attending, but you know, there's a lot of long technical shots and it's just fun to shoot long yardages. So I certainly understand, you know, people wanting to buy a slider sight. And really, I would say if you're looking to buy a new sight, I would probably buy a slider sight. I'd recommend it. It's just fun to shoot. It's fun to shoot long yardages. You know, but there are some considerations to make when you're setting that thing up and you're thinking about taking it in the woods to hunt with. It's interesting. Slider sights are interesting. I kind of gone back and forth on them. And one of the things that I've been thinking about in regards to slider sights is how you set them up. I've been kind of going down a rabbit hole and thinking about what I want to do for this year and how I set up a slider sight and what side I want to shoot. All the sights that I mentioned that are sitting here on my desk are slider sights. And one of the decisions, like I said, when you set up a slider sight is how you set it up. How do you, you know, configure your pins? What do you use as your floater pin? So this, like I said, it sparked something. I've been doing a lot of reading about how people set up their slider sights, and there's some different ways that you can do it. I know how I've done it. I'm going to touch on that, but there's some different ways that you can set those up. And I've been doing a bunch of research on how different people set their slider sights up. And I was reading in a forum and I read a comment from a guy that I really respect. He has a lot of experience in archery and bow hunting. And I wanted to read his comment. I also wanted to read kind of a rebuttal to his comment. And I wanted to give that to you guys for context and kind of let you think through, see what makes the most sense for you. I don't think that there is a right or a wrong way, but it's definitely sparked kind of some internal debate within myself. So before I get into those comments, I did want to kind of establish how most people, I think, set up a slider sight, or probably the most common way. So the most common way that someone's going to set up a slider sight or a multi-pin slider sight in particular is kind of as follows. So essentially what you would do is you would take your sight dial and you would put it in the default position to where the gang adjustment is basically, it's basically flush with the rail that your sight dials up and down. So you set that flush. Right. And then next you're going to take your 20 yard pin, your 30, your 40, your 50, your 60, if you're shooting a 5-pin sight, and you're going to kind of space those in your housing to where they look good. You know, they're about right. You know, you kind of like the position of them. You like the field of view within your scope. And then after that, you're basically going to use the gang adjustment to move your 20 yard pin to a point where you can sight that 20 yard pin in. Now you're not moving the sight with the dial, not the slider portion. You're moving the actual gang. And a lot of these sights have different adjustment points. So you can move, you know, you can move it with a dial up and down. You can move it with like the actual rail that the sight sits on. So you can move that up and down independent of the actual dial that moves it up and down. And you can actually move your individual pins within the housing in most cases. So those are kind of three adjustments that you can move your pins up or down vertically. So in the situation that most people, or what I'm recommending, that I think most people do, is they set that rail flush and then they use the gang adjustment, or moving the rail up and down, not the dial, but moving the actual rail that it sits on up or down, to sight in your 20 yard pin. And at that point you would make a mark on your tape. So you've got your 20 yard pin set, you make a mark on it. The next thing you would do is you would use the yardage adjustment down. So the dial, you would dial your sight down and you would sight in your 20 yard pin, the top pin that you just used to sight in at 20 yards, and you would sight it in out to 60 or to 80. I want to be clear, at this point, you've got your rail set or your gang adjustment set. You're using the dial to also sight in your top pin at 60 or 80 yards. And when you do that, you're going to make a mark, a second mark. So you've got a mark for 20 with your top pin. You have a mark for 60 or 80 with your top pin as you've moved that whole gang down with your dial. At that point, what you're basically going to do is you're going to take that tape, that blank tape, you're going to measure the distance between that top line, the bottom line, which you sighted in, and you're going to compare that against the different sight tapes that come with your sight. This is how most people do it. There's other ways that you can build sight tapes, including programs like Archer's Advantage, or you can use a chronographer. You can measure your arrow speed as it leaves the bow and as it hits a target, and you can use some different programs to develop a sight tape. But most people, this is what they're doing. They're sighting in their top pin, 20, 60, or 80, and then they're measuring that distance, and they're comparing it to the sight tapes that come with their sight. They're getting the tape that compares with those two distances, and then they're using that sight tape to put on their sight. So at that point, most people are then sighting in their subsequent pin. So you got your top pin, you move it up to where that first mark that you made, you've got your sight tape on. You're basically going to sight in your subsequent pin. So you're going to move your 30-yard pin down, sight it in, 40-yard pin, sight it in, 50, sight it in, so on and so forth. And at that point, most people are going to use the bottom pin as the floater. That's the one that you're going to get the most distance out of because it's the bottom pin. So if you use the top pin in that situation, you're going to have to move that gang down with your dial much lower to get the same distance that you could get if you were using your bottom pin. So the advantage of using your bottom pin is that you're going to get more distance out of your sight before you run into issues with fletching or arrow contact with the bottom of your sight housing. So that's one reason that you should, you know, use your bottom pin. And I think this is how most people do it. You know, whatever yardage is, your floater pin is going to be set out is where you would put your sight tape on the bar. So for example, if you used your bottom pin and a 5-pin sight, let's say it's 60 yards, and you're going to use the bottom pin as your floater, you're going to put your tape on your sight with the 60-yard indicator, your indicator on your sight at the 60-yard mark. And then you're going to dial down for 70, 80, 90, 100 yards using your bottom pin as your floater. Now, if you did that, you could also dial up and shoot those in-between yardages with your floater, with the way that you created your sight tape that way. So you could still shoot those in between yardages, you know, you can use it for both essentially, if you will. But most people are doing that. Most people are using their bottom pin as their floater. So, which is a good way to do it. It's the way that I've kind of done it. I take a slightly different take on it, and I'll touch on that here at the end, but I wanted to read to you, this is the point where in the podcast where I'm going to get into some comments that I read, which is kind of a different take on this. And I thought it was interesting. I wanted to touch on it and just hopefully it's some food for thought for you guys. So I read online, like I said, I've already established that's how most people do it, using their bottom pen as their floater site. This individual has a different perspective and I thought it was interesting. I think I want to touch on it. So I'm just going to read this guy's quote and I'm going to talk about it at the end. So this guy says, my favorite way is to set the top pin in the middle of the scope and then position the other pins below at a couple distances I want, such as 20, 30, 40. And I'm going to use my top pin, which would be my 20-yard pin, as the floater. So he goes on to say, now what this means is that I can have my sight set at 20 on the sight tape. And if a deer comes in and it's too fast, you know, to move my sight, I can still use my fixed pins, which are set at 20, 30, 40, and I can take a good shot using a pin gap. But if that deer comes in, gives him some time, and he has the ability to dial that sight to the exact yardage, like 27 yards or 33 yards, he could then dial the sight and use his top pin as the aiming reference point. He goes on to say, I thought this was interesting. The most common method I see that just amazes me is setting up the bottom pin as the floater. He says, let's say you have a three pin so that they're set at 20, 30, and 40. And then the sight tape goes essentially from 40 to 100. So the floater pin is only used on shots longer than 40 yards. He goes on to say the guys with five pins usually do 20, 30, 40, 50, and 60. And then the bottom pin floater is used for anything longer than 60. He says, to me, this is so stupid and one of the worst options. He goes on to say, I will never use 80 to 120 yard setups. I just don't shoot that far with my hunting bow. And I am absolutely not going to set my bow up for shots that I'm never going to take. I'm going to shoot from 20 to 70 yards with my bow when training and when hunting. I'm going to shoot almost 100% of my shots at less than 40 yards. So I have to assume this person is mostly a whitetail hunter, which I totally get. I would say for most Western big game hunters, most of the shots that you are going to take are going to be 60 yards and in, 99% of the shots, I would say. So he goes on to say, why would I set up my sight so that my floater pin starts at 60 yards and is only really going for any distance longer? He says, I don't want to do that. I want to be able to dial to 34 or 42 or 27 yards exactly. The other nice thing about my setup is that I have that I put the 20-yard pin centered in the scope and I use the floater and the other pins are below, and that gives me a really nice view of the target that I am shooting at, much like a single vertical pin. When I am aiming at a deer using the floater pin, the kill shot placement is usually down low in the heart, and that puts the extra pins out of the way below my line of sight or my vision of the main portion of the deer. So I thought that was really interesting, because essentially what this guy's saying is if you're using your top pin as your floater and you've centered that pin in the center of your housing, you're getting a better field of view, a better aiming point with the way that that's set up. And I hadn't really thought about that. I thought it was interesting and I wanted to note that. He makes a couple points, actually. So I wanted to touch on this. I thought it was interesting. This is a point I wanted to make. He says, I don't want to set up a site for shots in the field that I'm not going to take. And I don't want to get into a debate necessarily on ethics, but I think it's a commendable, and I think it's an interesting statement that he made. I know that for myself, there have been hunting situations where an animal has been 70, 80, 90 yards. And I've practiced at those distances quite a bit. And I'm decent. I'm pretty good at those shots. I can make those shots. And at the range, I pretty regularly make those shots. Am I 100%? I'm not. On, let's say, a 6-inch target at 100 yards, I'm not 100% out if I shoot a, 10 arrow group, not 100%. I'm probably not even 75%. I'm probably, on a 6-inch circle at 100 yards, I'm probably somewhere in the 50% range. But 50% of those arrows landed at 100 yards. And when you're in that hunting situation and you got a buck or a bull of a lifetime and it's standing there, it seems really easy to talk yourself into taking a shot that you may only be able to make 50, 70% of the time at the archery range. And I've been there. I've talked myself out of shots. I've taken some shots and, I've had some good results. Maybe it was luck. It might've been. But I've talked myself into it, and I always haven't been, completely confident, to be honest. And I think that's a bad thing. And I like the fact that this individual has stated he's in essence taking that off the table. He's saying, I'm not going to set up a site that allows myself the ability to talk me into taking a shot that I don't feel confident that I may not be able to make. We all think in the moment, what if I make this shot? I've made it at the range. I might make it. I might kill this animal. I might kill this buck or bull of a lifetime. And we play that what if game. What if I make this shot and it works out for me and I get this big buck? And I don't think that's a good place to be in. I think we want to be more confident in our shots. And I don't think we want to tempt ourselves into taking shots that we may not be able to make. We might make them, but then again, we're probably not as sure. So I would say, be honest with yourself. And this has really had me thinking, I think it's fun to set up a sight and shoot it out to 100 yards or 120 yards at my local archery range. I think it helps you focus on your form and your execution. I think it makes you a better shot in the long run. It definitely makes those shorter shots feel easier, like a chip shot, if you will. But it's had me thinking about setting up a hunting site and maybe reining that in a bit. Maybe only setting that site up to really what I feel is my comfortable, effective range, which kind of takes that off the table. It takes that guessing game or that talking myself into taking a shot that I may not be totally confident in, kind of takes it off the table. So I thought that was really interesting. I thought it was a really good take on this person and kind of the way he sets up his sights. I did want to mention it. I think it's good food for thought, good discussion to have internally for each individual as we set up our own sites. I also wanted to offer now a comment that's kind of a rebuttal to this individual. And this is kind of how I've set up my sites, but I'm going to read this individual's comments and the reason why he sets his sights up with the bottom pin as the floater. So this guy says, respectfully, I wholeheartedly disagree. Setting the top pin as your mover, especially on a 5-pin, is the stupidest thing you can do. You got to love the internet. People just really let their freak fly. They'll say things behind a computer, a desktop, that they probably wouldn't say to somebody's face. But I thought it was interesting. He goes on to say, for starters, when your average person dials to 80 yards, if you're using your top pin, you won't have the clearance and you'll be running into either contacting your veins or your arrow even potentially. He says, yes, you can dial to 43 yards, but let's get real. Anyone shooting a multi-pin movable sight is not seriously competing in field tournament. So gapping, say, for example, at 43 yards on a 3D or a deer or an elk is not all that hard to do, which I agree with. He says, even with a 3-pin sight, gapping out to 40 yards is super easy. He said, and then by using your 40 or your bottom pin, if it's a 5-pin, is a 60-pin, using that bottom pin as your floater, you're easily going to get way more yardage out of that sight than you would if you're using your top pin. He goes on to say, the entire point of a multi-pin movable sight is to have less overall pins and be able to practice and shoot at long distances more accurately than a fixed pin or using the top pin is your in your sight as a floater. Interesting take. I think it's I think it's good to discuss. It's good to think about. I wanted to highlight that here today because, like I said, it's really had my wheels spinning. I'm going to offer a little bit different opinion on kind of how I've set my sights up. Like I said, I'm kind of working through it myself on how I want to do it for hunting this year. So I've set my sights up slightly different than either of these guys. And basically what I've done is I've set my sights up for maximum clearance, maximum yardage. So basically what I've done is I've moved the rail, so the adjustment, as far down as I possibly can. I've then dialed the sight with the dial as high up as I possibly can. And then I've sighted in pins. So I've sighted in 20 through 60 in a 5-pin housing. And then I'm using the bottom pin as my floater. And I am sighting, either shooting in my bottom pin at those extended yardages, or I'm, you know, using the same method that I kind of outlined before, like Archer's Advantage or a chronographer, to kind of figure out what the tape on my sight should look like. But essentially what I'm doing is I'm cutting the tape at 60 yards and I'm laying that tape on my sight with the indicator at 60 yards. And in that position, basically I've got my sight dialed up as high as I can get it, the rail moved as far down as I can get it, and I'm sighted in each individual pin at 20 through 60. I'm using my bottom pin as a slider, and what that's giving me is maximum yardage ability. And mostly it's just been because I like to shoot at long distances. I like to shoot, you know, these fun shoots like tack, where you might have 120 yard or 115 yard elk, you know, downslope. And that's kind of how I've set my sights up. I'm using 20 through 60 as my aiming point. I'm pin gapping with those. This doesn't give me really the ability to dial to exact yardages from 20 to 60, which I'm okay with. Like I said, I've already established I'm pretty comfortable with pin gapping, but it does give me the ability to use my bottom pin as a floater and dial all the way out to probably 130, to be honest. I could shoot with my current bow setup with this speed, the draw length, the draw weight that I'm shooting. And that's kind of how I've been doing it. And I don't know if that's going to continue. Like I said, the discussion that I had and the comments that I read online have really got my wheels turning and got me thinking about how I want to set my sight up. And I don't think that there is a right or wrong way. I think there's some pros and cons of each. Like I said, setting your sight up where you can precisely dial to each individual yardage, I think, is advantageous. You know, using the top pin probably gives you a better field of view at aiming. It also probably is going to eliminate the temptation of taking a shot in a range that you might be outside your comfort zone. I think that's really interesting. You know, using the bottom pin as the floater and setting it up like I do to get maximum yardage is really fun. Gives you the ability to shoot way further distances. And I do think shooting at long range makes those closer shots easier. So there's different strokes for different folks. And, you know, how you set your sight up is probably something that you ought to consider, especially when most of us are shooting slider sights in today's day and age. So think about it. Make some decisions on what's the most important to you. One thing I will say is using the bottom pin as a slider does not give you as good as a consistent anchor point as setting up a top pin kind of in the center of the housing, or maybe using the middle pin as your floater and setting that up in the center of your housing. I think as you do that, you have a more consistent aiming and anchor point throughout if you use that center of the housing as your floater. I know that my anchor point using the bottom pin as my floater, as I get out to 100 yards, it slightly changes my anchor point. It's a little bit different. So I will say there's something to maybe having that center pin or your top pin in the center of your housing and using that as your floater. So a little food for thought, something to think about. Another, just a little tidbit or tip. So with that, this is some discussion. Hopefully that's helpful to you guys. I'm just trying to offer you guys some food for thought and work you through the process of what I'm thinking about right now. I did want to touch on kind of at the end of this on how I set up a new bow sight. Setting up a new bow sight, it's not all that complicated. Before getting started, It makes the process a whole lot easier if your bow is pretty well tuned. So you've got your stabilizers on the bow, you've got your rest on the bow, you've got your sight on the bow, and you've paper tuned that bow. You might end up making a few tweaks to your sight or your rest, I might say, kind of on the tune, depending on how it goes. It's kind of a relationship between your rest and your sight. The tune of the bow and the sight of your bow, those are going to kind of work in conjunction with each other. You might end up making some tweaks, but it does make it a whole hell of a lot easier to sight in your pins and your bow if your bow is tuned. Otherwise, you end up chasing your tail on what the real issue might be if you're missing. Is it the tune of your bow? Is it your sight? You can kind of end up chasing your tail. So I would highly suggest you tune your bow before you really dive down the rabbit hole of setting up your sight and setting in individual pens. That's kind of the first point that I would make. The other thing I would suggest is you kind of work on your peep or your peep height. So it helps you if you start with your peep in a place, a peep height that is close to where you're going to end up wanting it. So kind of the easiest way is to start to draw your bow, start drawing with your eyes closed, find your static anchor points. So those 3 points, tip of your nose, jawline with your release, and, you know, corner of your mouth with the string, find your static anchor point and open your eyes and look through your peep. And that peep should be, you know, indirectly in line with your eye. If it needs to be moved up or moved down, you can have somebody do that for you while you're at full draw, because there is not much tension on the string when you're at full draw, or you can just pop your bow back in the pressed and move that peep up or down depending on, you know, what you needed based on, you know, drawing it with your eyes closed and anchoring. Now you're going to probably end up maybe making some adjustments to that once you start the sighting in process. But getting it close out the gate is going to help you out. I do have a little note on peep height. So this is just like a little tip and a little tidbit. I think it is beneficial to set your peep height kind of at the most common distance that you're likely going to take. So for example, I think probably 40, 50 yard shot when I'm hunting elk is kind of where most of my shots are going to take. So ideally, I want to set my peep height where my 40 yard pin is centered in the housing, and I am shooting at 40 yards, and I'm going to put my peep height where those kind of all align up. I think it's not a great idea to set your peep height based on, you know, a 20 yard shot with your top pin, because once you get back to 60 yards, your peep height, excuse me, may need to be slightly different. It's going to look different. So I would say pick the median, kind of the most likely shot distance, 40, 50 yards, set your peep height with your correlating pin centered, kind of centered in the housing, and use that as a guide to set your peep height. Next thing I would do in setting up your sight is to make your adjustment to your axes. So first axis is kind of your sight bar being vertical, if you will. It's a lot easier to do this in a bow vise if you've got one. There are kind of like some simple redneck ways that you can do that if you want. In most cases, your bowstring, your cams are going to be, you know, level, horizontal, or vertical. So in a pinch, I've taken that, stuck it in a door jam or next to a door jam that I know is completely vertical and level. And I've compared my rail on my housing with just a level, carpenter's level, a small one, just to see how it relates. So that's kind of a quick and dirty way that you can do that. But ideally, a bow vise is going to help you out. So your first axis, like I said, that's basically the, you know, having your sight bar perfectly vertical and level. Your second axis is going to be your scope level, so sitting horizontal to that. And then your third axis is going to essentially come into play when you're shooting angles, either uphill or downhill. And you can kind of think of your third axis like a door hinge. It's like if you're a right-handed shooter, you're looking down from the top of your bow, you're looking at your sight, you see the scope housing. You can kind of think of that thing swinging on a hinge, either out or in. And your third axis gives you the ability to kind of move that in, move it out, And basically what you're doing is you're leveling out that axis so that when you are shooting on an angle, either uphill or down, that it's going to sit level and your arrow is going to hit behind the pin. So like I said, easiest way is to pop it in a bow vise for your first and your second axis. Those are pretty simple if you have it in a bow vise. Your third axis needs to be done at full draw. So essentially what you're going to do once you have your first and your second leveled, you're going to draw your bow back, you're going to look at your bubble, and then you're going to rotate at a 45 degree angle, and you're going to line up your pin post. So if it's a single pin, you're going to line up that pin post. Or if you're shooting a multi-pin sight, you're going to line up that row of pins with something that you know is perfectly vertical up and down. So a lot of people will hang a plumb bob from, you know, the ceiling, the roof. You can use the door jam trick if you know that that door jam is perfectly, you know, vertical and level up and down. You kind of line those up and you watch your bubble as you bend over at a 45 degree angle aiming downhill. You can do the same thing from your knees aiming uphill, and you kind of check to see what your bubble does as you adjust at the waist as you're aiming uphill or downhill. And you can make adjustments to that third axis, either kind of swinging that hinge in or out to get that to where, as you go through that exact same exercise, you're shooting uphill, you're shooting downhill, that that bubble sits completely level as you make those changes. I would also suggest you shoot in your third axis. So go up to your local range. If you've got, you know, one of these little Reinhardt 18 and ones, kick it down a hill. Get some angle on it. If you got a tree stand, climb up in it, shoot down out of your tree stand, pick some various distances and shoot in your third axis. See what your impact point does and, you know, make adjustments from there to actually shoot in your third axis. When you're hunting out west, shooting up and downhill, it's pretty much a given. You're going to be shooting uphill or downhill and almost, I would say, 90% plus of the shooting situation. So your third axis is really super important. So take time to level your sight before you really get into sighting in individual pins. So once I've got those done, I've got my sight mounted, it's leveled. The next step is to align your peep with your housing. So to accomplish this, you draw your bow back, you'd anchor, you'd look through your peep sight to the sight housing. And the goal is to have the sight housing ring fit precisely within your peep at full draw. So you want those two to line up. That's going to give you a consistent reference and anchor point. I have a bad tendency when I'm shooting at long yardages to kind of fall out of the bow and kind of adjust and change my anchor point. And I start to see my peep and my housing alignment kind of start to drift. I have a bad habit of doing that, but ideally what you want to do is stay in the bow, stay in your anchors, and make sure that your peep and your housing is perfectly aligned. So if they're not aligned, for example, let's say your peep is too large, it's basically above and your housing is kind of floating around inside your peep, there's a couple of things that you can do. That's one of the advantages of a dovetail sight, where you can move that sight bar to move that sight closer to you or further away to you, away from you. If you think about it, if you're moving that sight bar towards you, the housing is going to be larger. It's going to appear larger. It's going to take up more room. So if, let's say, for example, your peep is too big, it's sitting outside of your housing, you can move that housing closer to you. Same thing, if your peep's a little small, you can move that sight further away from you. And in most cases with these dovetail mounts on sights, you have a lot of different options that you can move those either in and out to get perfect alignment with your peep. And that's primarily the reason that dovetail sights exist, is your ability to move those in and out and get perfect alignment with your peep sight. The other thing that you can do is you can adjust the size of your peep. The most common peep sizes are in hunting are going to be like a 3/16 or a 1/4 inch. What's great about those is they let a lot of light in. And if you think about a hunting situation, I've already stated, but you're going to be low light, dawn and dusk. So a larger peep is kind of nice because it gathers more light. Some people use an 1/8. That personally for me is a little bit too small. On the other end of the spectrum, that 3/16 or quarter inch peep size is too large for me. I just don't like it. It just looks like it's way too much space. And in target archery, most guys are shooting small peeps. The smaller the peep, the more accurate the bow is going to be. So you kind of want to find a happy medium. And I've kind of found that for me, 5/32 is about right. It's kind of an in-betweener. And a lot of peep sight companies are making 5/32 peeps, including, you know, Hamsky makes the Raptor peep super popular. They're making a 5/32 option at this point. So that's one other thing that you can do to ensure that you get proper peep and sight housing alignment is you could adjust the size of your peep. So if you need a smaller one, you could go down a little bit. If you need a bigger one, you could go up. But really, you can work with those two different things, whether moving the sight closer or further away from you or the size of your peep to get perfect alignment between your peep and your housing. So now I've got my bow tuned. I've got my sight leveled. I've got my axes all leveled. I've got my peep aligned with the housing. The first thing that I would do just to make sure that you're going to hit the target is I'm going to adjust my left and right on my sight so that my row of pins or my single pin post is kind of sitting directly behind the string if I'm looking down the bow from behind it. That's going to ensure that I'm probably not going to miss left or right at 20 yards. And that's probably one of the first adjustments I do is move that left and right so it's directly behind the bowstring. And you know, I'm probably going to hit the target. I may have to make some adjustments either left or right at that point. Once I've started shooting and kind of sighting my individual pins, but that's one of the first things I do. Like I said, now you got to kind of decide what you're going to do, how you're going to set up your slider, whether your top pin is your floater, your bottom pin is the floater. Or, you know, if you want to set up a fixed 5-pin or a fixed 3-pin with your bottom pin as the floater and set it up for maximum, you know, yardage. It just kind of depends on what you want to do there, but you got to kind of decide what you want. Sighting in the pins is critical. I wanted to touch on this. So my method of sighting in pins is I like to take a piece of tape and I put that tape horizontally on a target. And the further I go out, I may have to go with a larger piece of tape so that I can see it. And the closer I'm in, I want a real narrow piece of tape because I want it to be precise. So the reason that I don't use a dot, for example, if sighting my individual pins in, is because I don't think it gives me as good a reference or aiming point as a piece of horizontal tape on a target does. Specifically, if I'm shooting a multi-pin sight where the pins come in horizontally, I can line up the whole length of that pin as it comes in horizontally with the piece of tape on the target. And I'm not really worried at this point about my left and rights. I'm really only trying to sight in on the vertical each individual pin. So I like that I can line up that whole length of the pin as it comes in horizontally with the tape, execute a shot. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to place all those arrows in the piece of horizontal tape on a target for that pin. That's going to get me the best, most precise vertical aiming reference point. And basically, I'm going to go back in distance. I'm going to sight in my 20, go back 30, 40, 50, 60. I'm going to sight in each individual pin with that tape method, a horizontal piece of tape on a target. I also should note that I would suggest shooting groups. I see a lot of people that'll go out, they'll shoot in one arrow. Yep, that one was dead money. And that might be the case. I think each of us knows when we've executed a good shot. And I think there's weight in that, but I like to shoot groups and I like to, it might take me 2 or 3 days. It might take me more than that. It might actually take me a week to shoot in 5 individual pins because I like to shoot groups. I like to be really sure that my marks are as precise as that I get them as I can get them. So shoot groups, shoot a piece of horizontal tape, go back, sight each individual pin in as you go. Don't skimp on it. you know, first I'm going to do this with field tips. And then as I get that set in, I'm good to go. I'm practicing every day. It's not going to be too long before I break out my broadheads and put broadheads on my arrows and I start doing the exact same thing. If you're shooting a fixed blade broadhead, you're probably going to see some differences in your impact point. So you may need to make some adjustments on the vertical to your individual pins. You might have to adjust your bottom couple pins maybe to allow for the differences in your broadheads and how they fly in comparison to your field points. You know, I know every broadhead company makes the claim that they fly exactly like a field tip. I just don't think that's the case. Even expandables, really, there's a slight difference. It's just a different piece of equipment on the front end with different dynamics, different aerodynamics. It's going to fly differently. So it makes sense to me to shoot in your broadheads with each individual pin that you plan to hunt with. Make sure that they're set up and I shoot those in the exact same way. After I've got my vertical set up, I got my pin set vertically. You can do the exact same thing with your left to right. You can take a piece of tape, put it on a target vertically, line up your pins, your row of pins or your single pin on the pin post and move back in distance, aiming at that vertical line of tape and see what your left and rights do. And, you know, you can use that exact same method. And the thing I like about that, like I said, overshooting a spot is that you have a much larger area to kind of line up with your pin, whether it's vertical or horizontal. And you're not really worried about hitting a spot. You're really trying to focus on one thing, either the height that your arrow hits or the left or right that your arrow hits. So if you're making some adjustments to fix your left and rights, you're going to move. Obviously, individual pins don't move left or right. You're going to use your gang adjustment to move the entire housing of your scope, either left or right. With that, just some brief notes. Basically, what you're going to do when you're sighting in your pins, you're going to chase your arrow. So if you miss high, you're going to move your sight up. You miss low, you're going to move your sight down. You move your sight the direction you miss. So if you're missing right, you move your sight right. You miss left, move your sight left. So you basically just chase your groups until you get those individual pins sighted in exactly. So that's kind of a rundown on sights, a big, you know, long solo podcast on sights. I promised you that I would offer you some thoughts on the individual sites that I've got sitting here on my desk. And I'm not going to go super deep because I'm already an hour and 10 minutes in of me talking. I'm sure there's going to be a bunch of discussion on this, on how individuals site their sites in. And I think that's great. I hope you guys reach out to me and give me some feedback on how you do it. Maybe I missed something. You know, certainly one thing I've noticed about doing these podcasts is that you think you know something, you think you have a really good grasp on something until you actually have to speak into a microphone and try to explain it in a way that you think it, and then, you know, try to communicate that to people in a way kind of makes you wonder how much you actually know. You think you know a lot until you have to put it out on a microphone for everybody to listen to. So, you know, if I misspoke, if you guys got contrary opinions, I'd love to hear about it. Shoot me a message or post up on, you know, our social or whatever it is. Shoot me an email even. All right. Sorry. Back from a little hiatus. I had some internet issues, so we had to cut right there. But I did promise at the end of this podcast, I was going to do a review of the sites that I've got sitting in front of me. I would add a couple others to those that I don't have access to. So the Spothawk Boonie site has probably been the most talked about site. It was released there, I think, at ATA in January. That Boonie site from Spothawk, they lightened it up from, you know, the Hog, the Fast Eddie XL and the Hogfather. Lighter option. It's got some great features, it looks like. And historically, Spothawk has been a really well-built site. I know that the demand for those is super high. So if you find one of those and you really like Spothawk sites, I would say jump on it sooner than later, because I know that the demand is going to be super high. And I don't know how many of those sites they're going to get out into people's hands this fall. So that's a great site. Unfortunately, I don't have one in front of me. The other one that I would mention I don't have in front of me, although I've owned a number of their sites over the years, is Black Gold. We don't carry Black Gold sites in the gear shop. You know, I think they are pro shop and direct sell. We don't currently have like a full pro shop at the Go Hunt gear shop. Hopefully we move that direction in the future, But Black Gold makes a nice sight. You know, the Black Gold sights that I have, I would suggest that they probably have the best pins on the market. They're the brightest, the most clear, in my opinion. They make a nice hunting sight. I have had some issues as far as like tolerances and like overall durability. There's been some like little quirks about Black Gold sights, but generally speaking, Black Gold makes a really nice sight. So, you know, I'm not going to speak at depth to those two options, which are, you know, Black Gold. They have a wide array of sights, whether it's the Ascent, the Scent Verdict, or you know, the Spot Hog options. I'm not going to speak to other options of theirs just because I haven't I don't have one in front of me. Spot Hog sights are really nice. They're a little bit heavy for me, to be honest. I know that some people, they don't really take into account the weight of the sight so much. People really buy a Spot Hog sight because they're bomb proof and they're super durable, which I can wholeheartedly understand. For me, I'm kind of looking for a sight that's a happy medium. I like a lightweight sight, to be honest, and I want it durable enough that it can withstand the rigors of hunting, backpack hunting. But I'm not hung up on having that thing be, you know, bomb proof, if you will. I kind of pamper my equipment. I take care of it when I'm out there in the woods. I mean, things happen and I get that. I personally haven't had any issues with a sight over, you know, 20 some years of bow hunting. I really try to take care of my stuff when I'm out there. I always carry my bow in my left hand. You know, if I fall, I take a tumble. First thing in the air is my bow. I'm preserving that at all costs. So that's kind of how I address it. But I am going to speak to the four sights, which I mentioned earlier in the podcast. I did want to offer a brief review of those if you're looking at buying a new sight, and just give you some thoughts. I'm going to offer you some pros and some cons on each individual option. Probably the hottest selling sight on the market, and with good reason, in my opinion, is the UV slider sight. And, you know, if you look at the UV slider, it's really sleek. It's really well built, super tight tolerances. It's got some great features, which I really like. Probably foremost would be the dial, the wheel. If you want to use that floater option, you know, you want to dial down to exact range. The actual dial on the side is really user-friendly. It's big. It's got a nice rubber outer portion of it, which is easy to grip. Your hand goes straight to it. The locking lever is adjacent to the dial. You can flip that up with your index, your pointer finger, and make your adjustment. The other thing I like about it is when the locking lever is engaged, you can still move that if you needed to in a pinch. So if you're in a hunting situation and, you know, you don't want to make the added movement or noise of lifting the locking lever and making that adjustment, you can move it. But when it is in the locking position, it's firm. But you can still move it if you wanted to without with the lever engaged. Another thing I like about the UV slider is the way that the windage, the left and right, is adjustable. You just pop out a little center knob that kind of sits inside the dial, and you make your clicks. It's a micro adjustment, either left or right. You don't need any tools to make your left or right adjustment, which is really handy when you're sighting in or if you need to make a slight adjustment on any given day, depending on how you're shooting. I like the pointers are pretty handy. You have dual pointers, so you've got the indicator that sits on the inside facing you. You can also put a tape on the outside. So if you wanted to sight in two different arrows, you could do that. If you wanted to sight your bow in where you've got those in-between yardages on, you know, the inside tape, you could run a separate tape on the outside to get those extended yardages. There's a bunch of different options that you can use and set this sight up. So it's really versatile. If I had beef with the UV slider, and I get the question quite a bit, like, hey, is the UV slider worth it? That's a hard question to ask. It is the most expensive option of the four I've got here on my desk. Is it worth it? I don't know if it's worth it for you. It's a really nice sight. I think it's really durable. I think it's really well designed, really well thought out. Is it worth that much money to you? It's a hard question for me to answer for somebody. I think if you want the best of the best, real durable, I think it's a great option. Going back to kind of my gripes, if you will. And Colby and, you know, Crispy, those guys kind of know this is my feedback to them. So I don't think this is going to catch them off surprise if they get wind of it. But I have a hard time seeing their pins. This sight, when you buy it, it comes with a 3-pin housing with a small set pin is a fourth pin kind of at the bottom that you could use as a floater for extended yardage if you wanted. And to me, the pins are a little bit small and they're not quite as bright as I would hope. And maybe some of that is just my eyes and where I'm at into my 40s. I just don't see them that well. The top three pins in that slider are going to be 0.015. The bottom pin, the little tiny one at the bottom of the housing, is a 0.0 or 0.010 pin. It does have the sight light option. I think it has the best sight light option of all the sights, but in a lot of states, a sight light isn't legal, including my home state of Utah, which I think is odd. I think it's kind of a stupid rule. I'm not sure why you can't use a small light to highlight your fibers. If you use that sight light, it works really good. It is bright enough. I wouldn't have any issues in shooting it then. It's just that in those low light situations, dawn and dusk, I have a hard time seeing the pins. I did swap out, like I said, the cartridges for a 2-pin option and a 19-pin. Swapping out cartridge, I would say, is an advantage of this sight. It's very easy. It's got a set screw in the side. All you do is loosen that thing out. You can buy and insert a new cartridge. It literally takes less than a minute. It's super quick and simple. Overall, super nice sight. I just wished it had more pins. I like 5 pins, and I wish the pins were brighter. Other than that, though, really solid option and one that I would definitely say people ought to take a look at. Next sight would be the dialed Arcos sight. The option that I've got here is a 3-pin in a vertical single pin configuration. The second and third pin within this are not adjustable, so you cannot sight your top pin in is like your slider and then adjust the second and third pin to whatever yardage you would like them to be. They are set to whatever they're going to be. So for example, if I sight this sight in with the top pin as my mover, it's at 20 yards. My second pin is going to be somewhere like 40 to 43 yards. Third pin is probably closer to 50. And those are set and they're a nice reference point for a hunting situation. I've already kind of said I don't necessarily like multiple pins on a vertical single pin stack. I just don't like it. I just don't think it's precise enough to aim with those subsequent pins. Although it's not really the intent of those. Those are just trying, they offer you a reference, if you will, in a hunting situation. Of all the sights, I think it has aesthetically, it's probably one of the coolest looking sights. It's got the hole in the middle. It's really sleek. It's got the angled rail, which your slider sits on and kind of angles it down. And, you know, the idea of that is because it moves on an angle, you can actually get additional yardage out of that sight. And that was the case for me. This sight offers me more long range capabilities than the other sights that I have. And saying that, you know, with my setup, it's maybe 5-6 yards. You know, and how effective am I really going to be out past 120 anyway? Mostly it's just for fun, but it does offer you additional yardages if that's something that you're interested in. One of my favorite features about the dialed sight is the bubble in the top of the housing. It's the only sight of these four and maybe on the market. I'd have to look and see, but to me, it makes good sense to have that bubble in the top of the housing versus the bottom of the housing. And that's a couple of reasons I think it's advantageous. One, I think it's easier to see. I think kind of out of your peripheral vision as you come to full draw, you anchor in and you're checking your bubble level. I find it easier to maintain and check my bubble when it's in the top of the housing than I do in the bottom of the housing. And that's even, you know, shooting a ton of sights over all the years, that the bubble is always in the bottom of it. The other thing I like about having the bubble in the top of the housing is that it kind of opens up the bottom pin for more field of view, better aiming, if you will. So if you're shooting extended yardages with that bottom pin in the housing, you've removed the bubble. The bubble's there. It's a better sight picture without that bubble in the bottom. It's a little bit more clear, and aiming and shooting with this sight at long range with that bottom pin as you're roving down, it's a better option. I do like that. So that's one of my favorite features about it. The pins are super clear. They're bright. This is a 19-pin sight that I've got here from Dialed. I have no problems with the size of the pins or the pin brightness. I love the fact that this sight is totally aluminum. I mean, it's really solidly built. I don't think it's going to offer you any issues with durability. It feels like a pretty bomb-proof, well-built sight. A couple of quirks about it that I'm not necessarily in love with. One is the locking mechanism to like lock that dial down. It does have like a little tension button that you push in, which does firm up. It's not going to like move on its own, but you can still move it pretty dang easy, and it makes me a little nervous, not crazy, but just a little bit. I just wish that there was more tension or a more set locking lever to lock that in a default position. Another thing that I'm not necessarily in love with is I really don't like floater or dial sights where your tape sits on a round wheel. And the reason that is it just, it doesn't feel as precise because of that tape being on a round wheel. And what I mean by that is like, if you look at that tape, if you look at it from different angles, so if you're kind of like above it and looking down on it, or, you know, you're holding the bow out in front of you more, or, you know, it just depends on the angle. When you're looking at that tape, the indicator kind of doesn't look the same all the time. So it doesn't feel quite as accurate. It's probably a, you know, very minimal point, but it does kind of bug me. I wish that the indicators were a little bit more precise, like I think that it is on a vertical rail, like on, you know, the UB slider or, you know, the Excel, which I'm going to talk about here in a sec. That's one little quirk I don't really love about it. There's another little thing that kind of bugs me is your axis adjustment is located inside kind of the barrel of the scope. So you've got your windage bar, your left and right windage bar, and then you have a piece that comes off of the actual scope housing itself that goes inside. And then within that, you have a set screw, which you adjust your axis with. And in order to adjust that axis, you have to actually move the whole windage bar out by, you know, micro clicks all the way out, make your adjustment to your axis, then click that all the way back into the set spot. It's probably not a huge deal because once you get your axis set, you know, they're pretty well set for the most part. You don't really have to worry about them too much, but it does kind of bug me that you have to do that and move it in and out to make any adjustments to your axis. Another thing is I just noticed it's not a huge deal, but there's a little bit of play in mine between those two. So between the windage bar and then the piece that comes off of the scope that goes inside the windage bar, there's just like a little tiny bit of play in it. You can kind of grab it with your hand and move it around a little bit. It's not a huge deal. I don't notice any added noise or vibration or anything like that through my bow, but it does kind of bug me a little bit. Overall, super cool looking sight. You know, I shot an Audad in Texas with this dialed sight, performed really well. I don't have any issues with the durability. And like I said, I love the fact that it's all aluminum construction. So, and I like the guys over at Dial. Those are super cool dudes and I like what they've got going. My guess would be that they're probably aware of kind of some of the quirks, and I would think that maybe in the future we'll see some of those addressed. I don't know. We'll find out. We'll see. Next sight that I want to do a little review of is the HHA Tetra Max. This is the tournament edition. The sight that I have is the 4-pin model. They make it in a variety of pin options. One of the things I really like about it is it's really solid. It's all aluminum, you know, metal construction. It feels beefy, feels heavy. It feels really solidly built. Even the actual rail itself that you dial up and down on, that's metal. I think it's going to offer you a ton of durability. I don't have any issues with thinking, you know, you could drop this on a rock or whatever it is that you're going through when you're out hunting. And I just don't think you're going to have any issues as far as durability goes. Again, your adjustment on this is similar to like a Spot Hog or the dialed sight where your tape sits on a round wheel, and you're going to rotate that and you look at your tape. I've already kind of expressed that's not my preference. I like to have, for one thing, I like to have the tape on the inside of the sight so that I can look at it. You know, I'm a left or right-handed shooter. I can, you know, hold my bow and I can look down at the sight tape. I don't necessarily really like the tape on the outside of the sight. You know, that's one little thing about the dialed sight that I didn't mention, but you can actually choose to run your sight tape on the inside of the sight or the outside of the sight, depending on your preference. Not really an option with the HHA. It is on the outside. It does have a really nice locking mechanism. You can lock that thing down nice and tight. You don't feel like it's going to move at all. Durability, I would say, is probably the best thing about this site. If I had any beefs about it, one, I think it's a little bit heavy. And also, I'm not in love with the scope on this HHA site. And, you know, if you look at them online or if you get a chance to get one in your hands, especially this multi-pin option, all four pins kind of sit to the back, all the way to the back of the scope housing. And it's kind of dark. The pins aren't quite as bright as they are on some of the other options. And I, for some reason, I just don't like the way those pins sit all the way to the back end of the housing. I much prefer them kind of in the middle of the housing for the front. It feels like they're brighter in that regard. Also, the scope housing on this thing is pretty big. I don't know how big it is, but it's probably one of the biggest of all the sites that I've got here. You know, not necessarily a bad thing. It's just my preferences. I like a little bit smaller. Overall, though, super solid site. You know, HHA has, you know, they develop a nice site. It's just a bomb-proof option. And I would say, you know, for guys that really like spot hog sites, and they like them for the durability and the construction, tight tolerances, I would say if you're looking for something new, you want to explore another option, I would take a hard look at an HHA. They make a really nice site. You know, if you have any other particular questions about this HHA site, you know, reach out to me because I have had a chance to play with it and shoot it. You know, there may be something I forgot to address. All right. Now, lastly, this is probably going to be the site I'll end up using the most. And it's a site that I've been using for a number of years, and that's the Excel Landslide with a 5-pin head. It's got 19 pins on it. It's the lightest of all the, you know, four sites that I've talked about today. It's well built, but it's lightweight. I don't have any issues thinking that I'm going to have a problem with the durability of it. The windage left to right is micro click. It's very easy to adjust. No tools required. I do like that. If there is one annoyance about that Landslide site, it's that the dial itself is small and it's located so close to your windage adjustment that it kind of gets in the way. Your fingers kind of get in the way as you're rotating that. So it's not ideal as far as the dial goes on that site. In saying that, I'm not dialing my site all that often, especially when I'm hunting. Most often, I've got that thing set in default where I've got pins from 20 to 60, and I'm not really worried about dialing it. But in a pinch, I can dial it. It's not the smoothest dial of these sites, though. I would say it's actually the least user-friendly in terms of actually being able to dial smoothly and quickly. It is lightweight, though. I like that. And I like the fact that it's a 5-pin option, and the pins are super clear and very bright. And I would say probably it's going to end up being, you know, my choice. It's early in the summer. It seems like I like to tinker and play with things quite a bit. So there's always a chance I could change. Yeah, you never know. But right now, and, you know, for several years in the past, for elk hunting, it's been my go-to. And preemptively, I kind of think it's going to end up going on my bow into the elk woods. We'll see. So that's kind of review. I'm sure you guys got more specific questions about each individual site. So if you got those, shoot me a comment. I'd be happy to answer them. Hopefully the podcast wasn't too painful today. Hope you learned something. Even if it just made you think a little bit on how you set your, slider site up. So with that, we'll catch you on the next one, and, you know, good luck in any upcoming draws. I'm getting my applications in. In fact, I got to get my app in for Nevada here within the next couple days. Seems like I push it right to the deadline. So I'm going to get my application in, get my kids' application in. Hopefully we come up with a tag, but good luck to you guys. We'll catch you on the next episode.